This is a presentation by Hillsborough Elam. Building bigger, working together, reaching further.
So there was a guy sitting in a park playing checkers with a monkey. They played on and on as they played, this guy and the monkey. Loads of people started to gather around. They were totally amazed. People were like, wow, there's a monkey playing checkers. This is absolutely incredible. And they played on and played on for a little bit until the guy sort of got a bit annoyed. And he turned around and he says, I don't know what you're so amazed about. I've beat him 7 out of the 10 times we've been playing. Here's a guy who has missed the point, okay? He, in his arrogance and his own self-absorption, has missed the point of what was really amazing, wonderful, and awe-inspiring. He was playing checkers with a monkey. And yet, I think that sometimes we can be exactly the same. Not that we play checkers with a monkey, but I think we can miss things that are right in front of our faces. I think that we can miss the point. We can be so focused on self or on what's going on or stuff that's maybe right in front of our nose that we miss actually the wonder, the amazement, the awe of what we have received in terms of the gospel and the one that we love in terms of Jesus. I think we can miss the point sometimes. And so what I want to do is a series, maybe a short series, we'll see where it goes, but a series and just say, Jesus is... What does that mean to you? What does that mean to me? I had the idea, and then I went searching for, I'm putting it out there just to let you know I didn't steal it. I had the idea, thought, brilliant, excellent, original idea. Went searching for images online and realized there's a book by a famous preacher out at the minute called Jesus Is, and I was like, well. So I'm not stealing it, and I haven't read the book. Who knows? I might say some similar things. I may not. But whenever we think about who Jesus is, what comes to mind? Take 1 minute, not even, turn to the person beside you, and I want kids involved in this too. Turn around. How would you finish that statement? Jesus is what? Okay? Okay, so involve everybody. Want answers from everybody? Okay, let's get some reaction then. Jesus is alive. Jesus is everything. Jesus is love. Jesus is my Savior. Jesus is God, Lord. Pardon? Provider. King. Awesome. Forever. A person a lot of people forget about. It's true. Yep. Pardon? Our rock. Absolutely. Brilliant. Okay. So loads of really good. And you know, we'll probably have ones that are really personal to us. Things that we go, yeah, that's, I know Jesus is that because I've experienced Jesus in this way in my life. Well, today I want to start with something that Jesus actually says about himself. And if you have your Bibles there, please turn to John chapter 10. I'm going to read a few scriptures. This isn't going to be our main scripture today, but it launches us into what we want to have a look at. So John chapter 10, verses 11 to 14. And Jesus is speaking. It says there, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees a wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. So today I want to say Jesus is shepherd. He is our shepherd and the good shepherd. And that's what I want to have a look at. Some brilliant things that he says in this particular passage about who he is. Things like the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Things like I know my sheep and they know me. But the thing that I want to focus on, because all of us, our minds will probably go to one of the most famous scriptures, and that's Psalm 23. And I want to have a look this morning at Psalm 23. So if you turn there again, and we're going to read Psalm 23 and the beautiful words that we're very, very familiar with, but we should never get so familiar with that we lose our awe, our amazement, and our wonder at what's being said. So one of the things I encourage you to do, now I'll not take too long to read it because you might fall asleep, but I encourage you to close your eyes. Now you don't have to, okay? But I encourage you to close your eyes, have it in front of you because you can look at it, I'm going to be referring to it. But let me read it to you. As you close your eyes and allow the imagery and the poetry to just start to impact your lives, impact your imagination and your heart this morning as we look at the shepherd. Psalm 23, a psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. So surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. Amen. You can open your eyes now, okay? You don't get grace now for having your eyes closed, okay? But the Lord is our shepherd. And what I kind of want to do today is kind of do a bit of a match of the day highlights version of this. And this is so rich. The things that we could discover and talk about, we could do one of those really long series on this because it's so beautiful, the imagery and the pictures and the depth to which we could delve in here. But I want to do, as I say, match of the day highlights and just lift a few of the things that really would impact us and touch on them. And hopefully we would once again fix our eyes on the shepherd and be in awe and amazement of who he is. So what I'm going to do this morning is break this into two sections. First of all, I'm going to talk about what the shepherd does for us. Okay, because there's statements here, what the shepherd does. And then I'm going to say what this does on us. It's easy for me to speak. What this does in us, okay? So what the shepherd does for us, but what it does in us and the response that comes from our lives as a result of that. So first of all, six really quick statements that we're going to look at about what the shepherd does for us that we find in Psalm 23. Number one, he makes me lie down in green pastures. So already we're getting this idea that he is a God who brings restfulness and peace. Simple reason being this, that sheep are very nervous animals. For a sheep to lie down, it means they have to feel safe and secure. They have to feel like their environment is protected, that they can trust the ones that are around them. They're not on alert for something coming to have them for lunch. They only lie down, apparently, I'm not a farmer, by the way, but I've researched this and found this, but they only lie down when they feel safe and secure. So let's move on a wee bit and we'll apply that in a moment. Green pastures. The terrain of Israel was very arid and barren. And a skilled shepherd would know where to find places of nourishment. So let's have a wee look at that then. He makes me lie down. We can trust in him. Whenever we've got the shepherd in our lives, he brings a sense of safety and security, a sense of well-being that causes us to be able to drop our guard and relax. That's the picture that's being painted for us. I suppose what I would compare that to would be Do you remember whenever you were a kid and you got into the car with your mom or your dad and you were driving a distance, and there's a couple of things. Number one, you didn't really care where you were going. You didn't know where you were going. You maybe asked a few times if we were there yet, right? But, you know, you didn't have a clue where your location was or even necessarily where your destination was, but you were relaxed and calm because you trusted them. You trusted that they were going to get there. And so what happened a lot of times is you fell asleep. Anybody ever remember whenever you fell asleep and you woke up in your own bed? That was just class, wasn't it? It was just brilliant. Don't you wish sometimes that could happen now? So take a strong person to carry me up the stairs and put me to bed. brave as well, probably. But that kind of trust. So I don't know about you now, but if I get into the car with someone, not that I don't trust their driving, but I don't sleep anymore in the car with somebody else driving. Because I'm aware they break a wee bit harder than I was expecting. And I'm like, what's happening? What's going on? I want to know where I am. I want to know where I'm going. I don't trust as easy now as an older person as I used to as a child. And it's kind of that trust that this is talking about. That kind of relaxed. I know that God's in control. I don't know where my location is. I don't even know necessarily where it's going to take me. But God, you're in control. You make me lie down in green pastures, in places of nourishment. So in the midst of even our wilderness experiences, our dry times, our rocky terrain within our lives, he makes us lie down, feel safe and secure in a place of nourishment and blessing. That's our shepherd. The second statement is, he leads me beside quiet waters. Again, a similar idea. Sheep are frightened by rushing, noisy water. Not only are they frightened, but Bill, myself, and my dad, a couple of years ago, went to hear this archaeologist who talked all about the 23rd Psalm, and he was giving us insights from a Middle Eastern perspective. And one of the things he said about fast-flowing water was that if a sheep would go into the water and it was fast-flowing, it would saturate its wool, and it would become so heavy that the sheep would probably not be able to stand, and it would drown. But in quiet waters, the sheep is able, in a still waters, whatever way the wool is knitted and made up, knitted, it's not knitted yet, but you know what I mean. Do you know, I'm going to pause a wee second, bit of silliness. We had tourists over one time, loads of years ago, and we were driving down the road, and they seen the sheep with some had red on them and some had blue on them, and they were from across the Atlantic, and they asked, hey, why the colours on the sheep? I says, oh, that's what colour jumper they're going to be. Oh, right. So I think they're away back home thinking that was the case. Okay, but anyway, that was unfair, wasn't it? Okay, but apparently, whatever way they are, they're able to go into the quiet waters. They're not saturated, but they're refreshed. They're not laden down. They're not so heavy with water that they can't stand up, but the water refreshes them and cools them in the heat of the day. And, do you know, this really speaks into our lives. Sometimes busyness, stress, strains, and the weariness of life feel like they're going to pull us under. Do you ever feel like life is just rushing? Life is just so fast and it's flowing and it's saturating us so much that you think, man, I can't get a breath here. This is pulling me under. I just feel so weighed down with the stress and the strains of life. Well, what the psalmist says is in the middle of the stress and the strains of life, actually what our God does is he takes us beside quiet waters. He allows us to go to a place where we can be refreshed and find relief from all that would weigh us down. In Matthew 11, 28 to 30, and I love Eugene Peterson's paraphrase in the message of this. He says this, are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. This is Jesus speaking. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. And that's what the shepherd does. He leads us beside still waters. Thirdly, he restores my soul. One commentator says this, that this literally means He restores me to me. I kind of like that. He brings me back to myself. He restores me to me. Anybody this, well, especially last January, a new ad came out, and I think it was for Thompson's Holiday, and it was the ogre. Anybody see that ad on TV? And it was the ogre, and he kind of is coming in from work, and he's got the horns and the big teeth, and he's just this big, and he's, you know, crushing the handle and all, and he's so grumpy, and life's so annoying, and he goes off in the Thompson airplane, and he goes to a Thompson Holiday, and just slowly but surely, the horns fall off and everything, until he eventually dives into the sea, and he comes back up, and he's himself again. It's one of the best adverts ever, because everybody watching it goes, I need that. I need a holiday. I don't know. I did. I mean, I just go, I need a holiday. But that's kind of the picture of what God does for us. He restores me to me. He brings me back to myself. Whenever we feel like an ogre or stuff has gone wrong within our hearts, we feel so worn and weary. Well, he restores us. Something that I've been trying to consider this, even this week, is it's a little bit abstract, so stay with me. But what weather system is going on within your heart? Okay, you're like, what? Okay, but if you could describe what's going on the inside. Because sometimes we can be really calm on the outside. Sometimes we can look as if everything's going well on the outside, but there's a storm raging in here. Or there's a lot of fog and fuzziness, confusion. Doubt, self-doubt, insecurity. What's going on the inside? If you could describe it in terms of a weather system, there's a lot of rain because there's a lot of pain. There's thunder and lightning because there's a lot of torment or there's a lot of tumult and things are difficult and there's trouble. And what is going on the inside of us? And if I was to explain what, for me, he restores my soul means, is that he blows away the rain clouds and he allows the sun to shine again. He brings a beautiful spring afternoon into my heart. He restores my soul. He restores me to me. Let me use one more example that people my age will definitely, hopefully, get. Does anybody remember Golden Axe? Okay, yeah, Scott, one person, right. Okay, a few people, right, Golden Axe. So I used to go to summer scheme and used to love that down in the leisure center. And then in the leisure center, there's one of these big arcade machines and Golden Axe was something you put your 50p in and you got 1,000 lives. No, not quite. But you got a little life and you just sat and you pressed the buttons and you worked away. And you could either be this wee goblin kind of guy with an axe or a big guy with a sword, or you could be a girl scantily clad in a red bikini, which I never was. Okay, but there was these three characters that you could be, and basically you went through and you were killing the enemy and whatever else, but you had this kind of like life energy bar, and whenever you were getting attacked, it would go down. And so there would be times whenever you're nearly dead, but you would get one of these wee things that would pop out, and you could hit it with the axe, and you would be able to get this potion, and you would walk across, get the potion, and it would give you more life, and it would take you right back up to being full again. Amazing illustrations come to your mind. But do you know what? God does that for us. When we're going through battles and things in life, he doesn't drop potion. He fills us with his presence. And he restores me to me. He restores us back to full again. He restores my soul. Number four, he guides me in paths of righteousness. Do you know sheep wander? Not what Isaiah says. Sheep wander. They on their own accord, they'll get nowhere fast. They'll walk around in circles. They'll get lost. But the shepherd leads the way. He knows there's a destination he's trying to get to. And so he leads the way. In Bible times, I'm sure you're aware by now, that a shepherd led the herd rather than driving the herd from behind. So the shepherd, he leads me in paths of righteousness. Do you know something? We've got a destination. And you know, we may not even be aware of what our destination or our destiny or the purpose and plan that God has for us is, but he does. And he leads us in the right way. And we can trust him as he guides us, as he leads us along the way. Jesus, our shepherd, has that destination for each one of us, a purpose and a plan. This is one of the core things in my life personally. I remember Psalm 139, that whenever I was in my mother's womb, he knitted me together, that I've been fearfully and wonderfully made. Ephesians 2:10, that we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he has prepared in advance for us to do. Jeremiah 1 verse 5 tells us about Jeremiah that even before he was in his mother's womb, that God had set him apart for a purpose and a plan to be a prophet to the nations. You know, God has a purpose. He's got a plan for each one of our lives, a destination, a destiny, somewhere where he's trying to get us to, and we can trust him to guide us there. And sometimes it might feel rocky. Sometimes you might go, this feels like a detour. This feels like it's not the right way. But what we can do is we know that we have a shepherd who leads the way. He guides the way. He gets us to our destination. He knows where he's going. We as sheep will wander. He is the shepherd, will take us where we're meant to go. We can trust him for guidance. Do you know, if you're maybe sitting today and you're thinking, I'm not sure about this or I'm not sure about that, I don't know about this decision or that decision, you can trust him for guidance. He wants to guide us. He wants to lead us. He wants to speak into our lives. He's the shepherd. He'll say this way or that way. You can go there. He wants to guide us, so we can trust him for his guidance, and we can trust him to lead us the right way. So whenever he gives us the guidance, even though it might seem a bit strange, we can trust that he knows where he's leading us and where he's taking us. He knows the way, and he will lead us in the right way. So if you're following him, hold fast. As I say, for some of you, you might feel like you're on a bit of a detour right now, but if you hold on to him, he's leading the way. He's leading you in the right path. Number five, he is with me. It's seen in two ways that breaks down in the rest of the psalm. First of all, he is with me, so it says that, but it kind of expands it a bit more in verses 5 and 6. He's with me because he prepares a feast for me. I suppose this is where David starts to add to the whole shepherd sheep metaphor, and he kind of brings it a little bit more to a human interaction. Because he shows us that this shepherd wants us to dine with him. This is really biblical language for fellowship, for communion, for being with someone. To dine with them. Do you remember in Revelation chapter 3, and Jesus is talking to the church at Laodicea, and he says, to him who opens the door, to him I will come in and dine with him and he with me. The whole idea is fellowship, is Jesus and the shepherd being in our midst, being with us, spending time with us, coming around about us. And that's God's heart, is to be with you and for me, even in the midst of our enemies. This psalm is most probably written, Bible students think, most probably written during David's exile from Jerusalem during the time of Absalom. So Absalom, his son, has rebelled against him and is trying to kill him because he wants to be king. And David has run away. He has got enemies, people who are literally trying to kill him. And he's in the wilderness. And yet he says these beautiful words, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. In the midst of some of the worst trouble he's faced in his life, David's saying, but God, you want to be around me. You invite me in so that I can know your presence, so that I can dine with you and you with me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And it goes even further because he said, and you anoint my head with oil. To anoint someone's head with oil when they came to dine with you was to say, you're actually a treasured guest. You're actually really honored and valued. Do you remember whenever Jesus went to Simon's home and he wasn't anointed with oil, but the woman came in with the alabaster box and she anointed him and he said, you didn't kiss my feet or anoint my head. You didn't honor me, but she did. It's the same language, it's the same idea. But it's actually turned around and saying that God prepares a feast for us. He invites us to come in and he says, you're welcomed here. I just find that incredible. I mean, that's what we were singing that earlier this morning. I'm a friend of God. I'm an honored guest of God as he wants to invite me into his presence, as he wants to draw me near to himself, to have fellowship and communion with me. Wow. He prepares a feast for me. And so, for you and for me, we have a shepherd who even whenever we're in the wilderness, in the difficulty and the difficult moments of our lives, prepares a feast for us and says, you might be going through the worst of times right now, but I want to surround you with my presence. I want to invite you in as an honored guest. I want you to know communion with me, fellowship with me. This isn't just a shepherd and a sheep thing where I'm just going to kind of look on you and there's no personal interaction. No, I want you to come and eat with me and dine with me and know my presence, know my goodness, and that we can be friends like Moses talked face to face with God as a man talks to a man. That's God's heart for us, that we would know him, that we would be in his presence. But it gets even better because David writes this. He says, surely goodness and love will follow me. So not only does he prepare a table, but he pursues you and I. It's not like just this invitation, but he is pursuing you and me. And the picture again of these sheep who are walking through the wilderness, and there's going to be wolves and lions and bears, we've discovered even from David's time, who want to come in and eat the sheep. They want to destroy the sheep. They want the sheep for lunch. And so they're continually, these sheep, being pursued, being followed, basically for lunch. That's their existence. Their existence is that there are predators and there's animals that are trying to get them. And David turns that around and says, just as that is relentless on the sheep, your love, your goodness is relentless towards me. You pursue me, you follow me with your goodness and with your love. The word that's used there, love, can also be translated mercy or loving kindness. It's the Hebrew word chesed. And it's an incredible word. It's so difficult to translate it because it's so rich in meaning. It's very similar to the Greek idea of agape love. But it's this loving kindness, covenant love, a love that doesn't give up. It's the love that's from Hosea chapter 3, whenever God says to Hosea, go back and take your wife back, even though she's been a harlot, even though she's been an adulteress, but you take her back and I'm going to show that's exactly the same way I love Israel. It's this loving kindness, this love, covenant, never giving up, faithful love that he pursues you and me with every day. Even right now, he's pursuing us with his love, with his goodness, with his kindness. He's a good God. And he's following us. He is pursuing us today. Even the good days and the bad days, he is relentless in his pursuit for you. The sixth statement is this, that he comforts me. The rod and the staff. The rod was used to beat away predators. The staff to keep the sheep from falling. It's comforting to know that he protects us from the enemy and from ourselves. I don't know whether you've ever experienced God protecting you from yourself and wrong decisions and things that you should never have done, but he does it all the time. And from the enemy too. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That's our shepherd. And that's what the shepherd does for us. So then there are four statements very quickly today that we're able to glean from this and say, so that's what he does, but what does that do in me? And there are four statements that we can make when we realize that he is our shepherd and this is what the shepherd does. First statement is this, I shall not be in want. I shall not be in want. Some of your translations probably say, I lack nothing. I've got Jesus. He's my shepherd. I don't need anything else. Do you know something? It's in those times of trouble, in those times of difficulty, when we find ourselves in the presence of God and we realize he is all we need. It's in those times when everything has been stripped away and when we are at our most desperate that we realize that the stuff that we've built around ourselves, while it may be good, it's not enough. He is all we need, and when we have him, we have everything that we need. We have everything that we need. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. Because with him, I have everything that I need. Secondly, we can say this, I will fear no evil. Wow. He is my shepherd. Therefore, I will fear no evil. And watch this. Look, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, this is not, oh, well, just on the good days, You know, when I'm on my Thompson Holiday or Thomas Cook, just to be equal. But actually, in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. That phrase means like the shadowy, murky areas of the wilderness. Times when it's dark, times when it's difficult, times when we're unsure about the future, we can fear no evil because he is leading me, because he is comforting me, because he will restore my soul. He's our shepherd, and we can fear no evil. Thirdly, my cup overflows. Speaks about joy. Speaks about the overflow of joy within his life. Again, let me remind you, David is not just sitting in his palace, being brought a big feast where he can sit and go, oh, life's good today. David's going through a difficult time. Probably, as I said, one of the most difficult in all of his life. And yet in the midst of it, he can experience and know an abundance of joy. My cup, it overflows. We too, as we dine with the shepherd, who anoints our heads with oil, can know him pouring his love and his peace, his strength into our lives so that we can overflow with joy. Fourthly and lastly, he says this, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Basically, it's good and it's only going to get better. And that's his eternal hope. It's good, but it's going to get better. David's in a place where he's not near the house of the Lord, but he knows that the house of the Lord isn't the structure, the temple, the building, the tabernacle. He knows the house of the Lord is where God is, the presence of God. And he dwells there, both now and forever. He is our shepherd. He is the one who guides us and leads us. He does these things for us. He leads us, makes us lie down in green pastures. He leads us beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness. He is with me because he prepares a table for me in the presence of my enemies, and he pursues me with his goodness and his love. He comforts me as he protects me from both myself and the enemy. Therefore, I shall not be in want. Therefore, I will fear no evil. Therefore, my cup, it overflows with joy. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Let me finish with this. And it's just the simplest of thoughts. And probably anybody that's ever preached on this sermon will have mentioned it. Or this message, this psalm. He is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. This was really revolutionary writing from David at the time, because the Israelites and the people of God would have always viewed themselves corporately, which is a brilliant way to view it, absolutely. Corporately, we are the people of God. He is our God. But David, in this time of difficulty, recognizes not only is he our God, not only is the shepherd of Israel, but he's my shepherd. And he does these things for me. He has this effect in my life. Let me finish with a story, and we're going to come around the table. And my hope and my prayer has been just to point to these issues, point to the fact that he is our shepherd. And I pray that it gets into our heart this week. And it makes a difference in our lives. And we can once again look on him with awe, wonder, and amazement. So I'm going to hand over to Bill in just a moment. You've probably all heard this illustration, but I just love it. There was an actor doing performances in a theater. And the actor, as part of his performance, was to recite without reading it Psalm 23. And he had worked on it. He had worked on his phrases. He had worked on when he would sort of make it more exciting and dip it and make it quieter. And he recited the 23rd Psalm, and people were amazed and applauded him. And wow, that was excellent. That was really, really good. When he had finished, he noticed an old pastor, an old preacher who he had known whenever he was young. And he says, it's really good to have such and such in the crowd. And he brought him out and he says, this is a preacher that I know. He says, I wonder, would you do us the honor of reciting the 23rd Psalm? And so the actor stood aside and the preacher began, the Lord is my shepherd. Certainly wasn't as eloquent, certainly wasn't as dramatized as the actor's recital. But at the end of it, there were people in the audience crying. There were people who were deeply moved. The actor later came to the preacher. He said, what was the difference? How come, yeah, people were amazed at my performance, but they were moved through yours? The preacher looked at him and he said, son, you know the psalm. I know the shepherd.